Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Eric Struthers is the saber-making, armor-wearing, John Williams-loving rock god host of the Bad Motivators podcast. On this episode, we chat with Eric about how his spoiler-filled lead-up prepared him for the rise of Skywalker, the many facets of his fandom, and highlights of the sequel trilogy era of Star Wars.
Well, because I can say this, man, looking back, being in the room for the 40th anniversary panel, when John Williams was behind that curtain in Orlando, I would not be willing to give up that experience for lots of scenarios. If I could give you, well, of course, like $1 million, I probably would. But you know what I'm saying? That was such a high point, not just in my fandom, but just in my life in general, being there with John Williams playing Leia's theme, leading off. How great of a moment that was.
It's a super fun Star Wars chat. This is Steel Wars episode 231, Eric Struthers, Good Motivator. Los Angeles, Steel Wars returns to the Scum and Villainy Cantina Saturday, the 25th of January, for our 1 month after the Rise of Skywalker live podcast. Our 1 month after the Last Jedi podcast was a huge sold out Star Wars discussion, and this one should be no different. So get your tickets at steelwars.com, and we'll see you at the Scum and Villainy Cantina in Hollywood on Saturday the 25th at 4 p.m. Click the link in those show notes. Hey guys, welcome to Steel Wars. I'm comedian Steel Saunders and I do love Star Wars. And each week we talk to someone of interest about it. And finally, after a grip of other coverage of all the TV shows and the Rise of Skywalker, we are back to our classic interview format. And this week's guest will be no stranger to listeners of the Steel Wars feed. He is a Bad Motivator from the Bad Motivators podcast and also hosts our Struthers Wars program. Welcome to the podcast for the upteenth time, Eric Struthers.
Hey, buddy. Thanks for having me, man. I'm really stoked to do this.
I am, I've been looking forward to doing this all day after, a bit of post-Hurricane Harry has left the house. So I've got to pick up the pieces, as it were. What's been going on, Eric? You went into the Rise of Skywalker, like, spoiler-filled, yeah.
Yeah, and I got to be honest, once it got down to the wire, I totally avoided the final big spoilers. I didn't want to know how the movie ended. I didn't want any third act stuff. And I can honestly say that after seeing the movie, I wish I had gone in spoiler-free.
Really?
Yeah. Now, it didn't ruin the experience for me by any stretch of the imagination, but there were several things where it's like, oh, man, I wish that would have blown my mind instead of already knowing what was going to happen.
Yeah, I guess there is some mind-blowing things in there. I sort of, it's ironic because I enjoy it more knowing what's going to happen in the film.
Right. Well, sometimes it can be a relief. Look, this way I know I don't need to worry about whatever, because I know it's not going to happen, right? Yeah, but like the Chewbacca thing, of course, looking back at it, I would probably have guessed that he didn't actually die in that ship explosion, just because they wouldn't take out a major character like that with just no circumstance. Just we'd see him handcuffed and get shoved on a ship. And
you could tell he didn't die because, like, when, like, Finn was screaming at the blast, like, he wasn't feathered with fur.
That was the dead giveaway.
Yeah. Yep. It was a fur-free explosion.
Yes. Yes. There was, so that was one thing I was probably glad that I knew.
Okay.
You know, just so I didn't feel sad for a minute, but just some other stuff like closer to the end of the movie that I had picked up on.
Okay. So what led you to go down this dark path for this movie? Because I feel like what's been your spoiler, like Phantom Menace? What was your spoiler level?
Oh man, for Phantom Menace, I was not spoiled at all, surprisingly. No, but just because of where things were at the time, like where the internet was versus like the type of job I had and the amount that I worked, I didn't have a lot of time to spend trying to find out what was going to happen. So I went in almost with very little, like I hadn't even heard very many people's feedback about the movie. That's how spoiler free I was.
I guess back then it was far. Yeah, you had to go to a lot more effort to find that stuff out. Like if you looked at your phone back then in the car, like would have had the cord running out from where it's been ripped out of the kitchen wall.
Precisely. Yes, exactly.
I was one of the first people, like easily the first one in my friend group to have a mobile phone. And it was pretty fly, Eric, pretty fly back then. It was so expensive when people would call you or to call people back. If you missed a call, I literally remember pulling over and using a telephone booth to ring them back rather than pay because it was so expensive.
Yeah.
To call.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. My first wife, man, she had a cell phone, around actually before then, before the Phantom Menace came out. And I used it once coming back from the airport for like a 30-minute call. Ooh. And man, oh man, was that we were filled with much regret after that.
Wow. Well, you did say ex-wife. And
yeah, that's maybe that's why.
A $3,000 mobile phone charge probably. and that's $3,000
Yeah. Whoa. Yeah, so that's big money, man. Big money.
So what about Attack of the Clones?
Attack of the Clones, I really hadn't heard much about that. I had heard about like the Kaminoans, really not much past that.
Interesting. And then Revenge of the Sith?
I don't want to say quite a bit more, but had more of an idea of the story fleshed out.
Okay. And what about like the sequel trilogy? Did you bounce around or did you go spoilers all the way?
For The Force Awakens, I went fairly spoiler free. I mean, it's anything released by Lucasfilm, I'm all in, you know, quote unquote target spoilers. But as far as any real spoilers, had no information that was the plan, to go in with nothing. Quit listening to podcasts, quit doing everything, just not going to do it.
Just stay in your house.
Basically, yes. Yeah.
I was pretty much the same. I remember going to making Star Wars to see something and being like terrified at the front page.
Oh yeah, basically the same thing. Yes, yes.
Because you know, back in the day, like on the Force.net, when they'd have the spoilers, you'd click into the article and then you'd have to highlight the text.
Right, because it was the white, same color as the background.
Yeah, 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 white on white. And like there'd be paragraphs and it's like I'll just highlight this paragraph. All right, one more paragraph. Oh, right. Whoops, I highlight the whole thing. But yeah. I was pretty moderate. Once it got a bit in depth, I was like, nah, not into that. I can't remember if I knew Padme was Queen Amidala. I think maybe I worked that out from the action figures.
Uh-huh.
But it definitely wasn't a surprise when I saw the film. You know what I'm saying?
Right. I feel like I knew that going in just from advertisement stuff.
Yeah.
That it was her. Yeah.
It was interesting. It's just sort of coming back to me, the Phantom Menace, because I don't think I knew that much, because as I watched the film, I was seeing where all the action figures I'd purchased fit in.
Uh-huh.
Because I'd bought like every one, and I'm like, Panaka, he's in the mix. Rick Ollie, Thought he would have done more. Whatever.
Now, I didn't buy anything from that era. Nothing.
I could not give my money away quick enough back then. That was a pretty decent paying job, and that covered my rent as well as part of working for them. And, you know, no, zero obligations.
Right. Living the dream, they call that.
Now, probably wish I hadn't have bought so many battle droids. I had so many battle droids. So very many. So what about The Last Jedi? How spoiler filled were you?
I was probably out of the spoilers available, let's just say, I was probably about 40 to 50% aware. So like stuff that's pretty early on in the movie. And once it started getting real, I was done with that. I'm trying to think of the most out there thing that I knew. I remember hearing something about that was sort of a weird explanation of the connection that Kylo Ren and Rey had. It wasn't clear enough to imagine what it was really going to be like in the movie. Trying to think of what else. I didn't want to know anything. I did want to know anything, but I didn't want to know anything about what Luke Skywalker was actually going to be like.
Like, that was the one I was most into, spoiler-wise. Mm-hmm. Like, I was really like, oh, it's... I didn't want to know the end. I'd never hit a point where I was like, I've got to stop now. Like, there wasn't enough to sustain me sort of thing. Because I just feel like that one was the most surprising.
Yeah.
They kept so much under wraps, which is ironic considering that JJ's the one with the, you know, the Mr. Mystery, the whole thing. But I remember just blown out the door. I the biggest spoilers I knew, which I kind of didn't want to believe, was that Luke wouldn't get the green lightsaber out, and it wasn't in R2-D2. Like, they were like I knew, or I'd been told that didn't happen. That I just didn't want to, like, it was such a bad spoiler, which sort of got me to The Rise of Skywalker, because it just seemed like people weren't having fun with the spoilers.
Right.
Like, it seemed like what was being spoiled was making people miserable.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was just like, I wasn't even really sure what they were complaining to or against, but I was sort of like, well, if they're controversial, I don't want to invest like energy and emotion into something that might not even happen. So mm-hmm,
right.
I'll worry about it after the film. But what made you go the other way?
For The Rise of Skywalker, what made me want to look into the spoilers was worry that one of the, you know, is C-3PO going to eat it during this movie? Is the Falcon going to make it through this movie? What's going to happen? Because this is it, man. What's the end game here? And I didn't want to be devastated. I wanted to get that comfort of knowing, okay, this person's going to be okay. This is going to be okay. But then whenever you're reading the spoilers, they sound, and I mean, some of them are way off too, but they sound so messed up. It's like if people try to explain this to you and then you see it on screen and you're like, oh, okay, I get it. They were so out there and everybody was bitching about it that it finally hit a point basically...
Give us an example of what one was like way out there.
Okay.
Because like, to be honest, I haven't even backtracked to find out what people knew.
Gotcha. Let's see. There was... it talked about how Rey and Kylo Ren were having this fight where they weren't even in the same location with each other, but kept jumping around.
I knew that one.
Mm-hmm.
And then that sort of like hinted on that art of The Rise of Skywalker as well.
With the above and below. Yeah.
Yeah, the water. Yeah. They're on Lake Endor.
Right. Well, and whenever it was explained to me, I thought it meant that they were actually in the same place, but the fighting was like skipping around to different places.
It was done so much better than what I had imagined it was.
Yeah.
And there's one shot when they're on Kimji?
How do you pronounce it? Kajimi.
Kajimi. Well, I don't mean to, you know, R.I.P.
Yeah.
I'm not going to be asking Waze to take me there anytime soon. But, yeah, when he's on Kiminji and she's in the Star Destroyer, and as they walk around...
In a circle.
Yeah, behind her back, the scene changes. Oh, and then it does to him as well. Oh, my God, that was just very well done.
Fantastic.
And I love the way things go into the other scene. Like the necklace thing was kind of like startling, how he just grabbed it. Like that was like sort of like a scary thought.
Yeah.
But then when they smash Darth Vader's helmet and it goes on like in front of him, like knows where she is. Like, oh, that was just done like so well. And it was cool that he couldn't go there. Like, do you know what I mean? Like, he was still stuck on the planet. Like, it was cool that it didn't just become, like, a teleportation device, but you're in some sort of weird, like, force bubble or something.
Yeah, they could see each other, but they appeared in wherever Rey's physical location was. That's where she saw Kylo Ren. She knew he wasn't there, but she couldn't see anything except him, and vice versa, which I thought was pretty rad.
I haven't thought about that. So Kylo Ren sees her on Kiminji. Am I saying that wrong already?
Kajimi. I think that's right. Kajimi. Yeah, I think that's right.
Kajimi. And then so Rey was seeing him on the Star Destroyer.
Right. Right. So basically it's like imagine each one of them is being filmed on a green screen and Kylo Ren sees that green screened image where he is of her, and she sees the green screened image of Kylo Ren where she is. They can't see anything else except the person.
Gotcha. How did that work in, I haven't thought about, like, The Last Jedi? Could they see each other's backgrounds then, or was it just not brought up, but when you watch it back, it still fits?
He says that he couldn't see where she was.
Gotcha.
He says, I can see you. Can you see me?
Okay. Interesting.
They did that very well. I had seen, and I wish I hadn't seen it. Well, I don't know. It was kind of neat. But I had heard about Leia having a lightsaber. And which I don't think that ruined it for me by any stretch of knowing that ahead of time. But it would have been cool to see it where they pulled it out and here it is.
Okay. So what surprised you in the film then?
Let's see.
What about the kiss? Did people know about the kiss?
I think a lot of people did, but I did not. And I was glad.
Yeah, same.
Because, I mean, I said out loud. I was like, what? I wasn't expecting it. And I don't know why. I feel foolish for not expecting it by that point.
I think I gave it a yes in cinema. Like I was like, it wasn't something that I'd been like actively rooting for.
Right.
Like Raylo style. But when there was a choice of are they going to kiss or not kiss, I was like, kiss. Like, do you know what I mean? Like putting everything else in that moment.
Right. In the moment, it was perfectly appropriate.
I was just kiss. And then when Ben smiled afterwards, I was just like, kiss again! Kiss again!
Dude. So I took Stella, my little girl. She's 7. I took her to go see the movie, just the two of us. And I had already seen it twice on opening day. And so this was just a few days later. And before we walked in, I had interviewed her several times for this Patreon show that we do, what I do with my kids. And where I asked her if she thought Kylo Ren and Rey would smooch. That's the word that I use. And she's like, no, they better not. And if they do, I'll stand up in the theater and say, you stop that right now. And so I asked her and recorded it on my phone before we walked in. I'm like, okay, so do you think they're going to do this? And she's like, no, they better not. And I said, okay, well, we go in the movie.
So did you make sure you sat sort of up near the exit?
I wanted to sit as far back as we could so she couldn't get out. She could just stand up and start screaming. But she ended up getting sick from just guzzling a big, huge slushy.
Oh, nice.
And so she ended up, like, she got sick, and then we went back in to sit down again, and she leaned her head over and was just out. Oof. I mean, fell asleep hard, to where I'm trying to wake her up because the scene's coming, and I'm like, hey. So what I had to
you can't just show it to her without the context.
No. So what I had to do later was get a not particularly reputable version of the film that I could show her some of it from basically where she missed out at home, you know. And she's like, and you know what she told me? It was that kid, man, she blows my mind. She said a couple of things. She said, number one, I'm okay with them kissing because he saved her. So that flipped it over for her. But the other thing she said, did I mention this when we recorded, when you were on the Motivators the other day? She said, Kylo Ren or Ben Solo's punishing himself for the bad things he's done. He can't forgive himself.
Yes. And that's.
And I was like, dang, kid. Yeah. But I was really hoping she'd see the kiss in the theater and, like, lose it. How dare you?
God, it'd be like a YouTube video getting filmed at the back of the cinema.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh.
Couldn't even wait to get back to rant in the car.
We need a podcast right now, Dad. That's my girl.
Okay. So, like, stuff like the lightsaber getting passed, you didn't know that stuff?
No. I had seen a picture of Rey and Ben standing together with the two blue sabers ignited. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, I had some pretty strong guesses as to what that was about, what the other saber was and all that. But I think it would have been killer to have not known that and seen it in the theater when it happened.
Mm. It's, from the things I knew, like, I feel like seeing the fleet turn up in the trailer is the thing I wish I hadn't seen.
Yes, that is a big one. Yeah.
Yeah. And also, like, the, like, shots of people that, like, Chewie, that are in the trailer, but then you're meant to think they're dead for, like, 10 minutes.
Yes. That was the other thing I was going to say whenever I think I would have been, I don't think I would have freaked out. Because I would have thought, well, we didn't see the part where they're in front of the Death Star on the water when he was plainly in there from the trailer. Yeah, that was the other thing I meant to say on that.
Yeah, it's because when the ship blew up, and, you know, first of all, there was no Wookiee hair everywhere.
Right.
We've covered
that. Dead giveaway.
But instantly, like, while I'm watching the film, my brain goes, like, rewinds through all the footage and goes, he's next to Lando laughing. So, it's, I don't know. It's one of those things where, like, it's so clear that moment's in the film. So you'd think you'd add footage for the trailer that doesn't expose that. Do we... Like, I feel like they're underestimating how many times we watch these trailers.
I think you might be right. Well, the one thing I can say about that is the length of time on screen that the heroes are supposed to think Chewbacca is dead is relatively short.
Yeah.
And so maybe if their intent was just for us to see the heroes think he's gone when we know he's not. And for I don't know. But yeah, it does seem like some of the stuff that they showed, from an advertisement standpoint, it was great, but it did give away, like, that moment. It was triumphant as can be when all the ships show up. And I will say, when you see it on screen and there's more ships than what you saw in the trailer, and the line that the Last Order officer says, it's not a fleet, it's just people, that really helped seal that up. And made it less of a bummer that you weren't seeing it for the first time on the big screen. But still, it would have been something to see.
Yeah, and it's sort of like easy and fun to like backseat edit the films like post-release. But I feel like, for one, don't put it in the trailer. But for two, like if they drew out the hyperspace a bit more, like so you thought it was just like a Return of the Jedi size fleet.
Right.
And then it's just like, dun, 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 like,
right.
And like, draw it out. Like, show some ships close up turning up, like that maybe you recognize. And then, like, then sort of show the full thing. I just thought it was like, there was so much, like, I so wanted it to happen. Like, I talked about it all year. The run in, you know, the people deciding we've had enough. And when Hulk Hogan's getting beaten up, they're going to run out and help him up, like, no matter, like, putting themselves at risk. It's an old pro wrestling term when like someone runs in to help out. And yeah, it's just like if it was just handled with a little bit more, like they came up with this great moment, enjoy it.
Right. Right. Yeah. That's a good way of putting it. Just let it breathe and enjoy it.
Yes. 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 Now, let's go back right to the beginning, Struthers. What's your first memory of Star Wars?
Oh, man. I saw Star Wars in the theater with my dad on... it probably wasn't the initial release in 77. It was the second theater run that was later in the year.
Yeah.
But I was just a little kid. And I remember... Of course, now you know how it is when you get a little older and you can't remember if you actually have this memory or you're thinking about seeing it later. But I feel like I remember seeing on the news, like the people standing in lines wrapped around the block and all that stuff on TV. And my parents had both seen the movie already before they took me. But I remember very well being in that theater the very first time with my dad and my mom. And my sister wasn't there. She was too little. But
and I'm sure it was a special moment when your dad asked you how you'd feel if Luke and Leia kissed.
Oh, it was. It was really, really, really something. One of the things that I remember specifically about it.
Add some Struthers ring theory.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh, dude. Anyway, one of the things I remember the most about that very first time is sitting in the theater seat, and this was before like stadium style seating. This was just like a gentle upslope in the theater seating. And I was so little, I kept the seat folded up and sat on the top edge of the folding seat instead of having it folded down.
Oh, wow.
And like mentally, I was like flying an X-Wing during the attack on the Death Star. I wasn't aware of anybody else in that place. And that's one of my first memories of Star Wars.
You'd installed your own 4DX cinema.
Basically, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Did you see Empire in the cinema?
Yeah, yeah.
Man, you're old.
Dude, I am. I was born in 1925. And, you know... When I remember when we first got movies with talking in them, whoo!
Well, at least Luke and Dallas will like this episode now.
Yeah. Who cares what they like? Yeah, I saw Empire, and this was probably 4 weeks after it had been released.
Fake fan.
Well, you know, I was sort of at the mercy of my parents.
Bad parents.
Yes, I'm going to agree with that. But here's the good news. I didn't know anything about it going in. Because I was just a kid. And I saw Jedi in the theater, but I knew everything about it because of the school book order, Return of the Jedi book that had Luke Skywalker on the sail barge holding the saber like this.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Of course you do. And I brought you one. And you're I already got that. And I'm like, well, I'll keep this for myself. But dude, I had read that. And I remember trying to explain everything to my mom as it went along in the movie theater. And I know she was like, shut up. Those are Gamorrean guards, mom.
I don't know. It's weird. I had that book and like I ordered it from the school But I feel like I'd already seen it when I read the book. Like, I remember being on the bus home from school and, like, I was the most popular kid on the bus.
Just naturally. Or because of the book.
No, because of the book. Like, I was, like, I would have been, you know, in one of the younger years, like year one or something. This is a primary school. So this kid's like 4 or 5 years older than me on the bus. But they were like my brother and his friends were hanging with me on the bus as we, like, we read out the book. Like, we all picked, those sitting closest got to pick what character they'd be. Because you know how, so for people that are too young to know what this is, like, you used to have, like, a mail order scholastic thing and you'd order books and they'd be a bit cheaper and next month they'd come. Is that, am I remembering this right?
Yeah. Now, they're not particularly any cheaper. Because they still do it. My kids get the book.
Oh, really?
And so, like, they're always wanting this and this. And my wife, she's the smart one in the family when it comes to purchasing things and not being emotional about it. But for me, man, I remember how much that stuff meant to me. And I'm like, oh, let's get them this and get them this and get them this. Because when those books would show up, it was like magic. And what they do with my son, he's in kindergarten. They just put him in his backpack when they come, and he finds out that they came when he opens his backpack when he's home. It's like winning the lottery over and over again.
I don't know, man. That sounds like confusing for a little kid. Like, like each day when they open their backpack, like, come on, book.
Yeah, well, I mean, he knows that it's not the book fairy bringing him or anything like that. But
interesting. Yeah, so we... Everyone got to be a different... Oh, because on the front of the book, when you opened it up, it had the main 10 characters. Do you remember that? Like,
I vaguely remember.
I'm now looking around to see if that book is... I've got a copy of it near me. But you would have, like... There was white page with, like, red Return of the Jedi. And then on the next page, it had, like, Lando, Wicket, and it had, like... You know, like Lando Calrissian, like general in the Rebel Alliance.
Okay. I know. I remember what you're talking about. Yeah.
And so everyone, like, sort of like the start of like Street Fighter 2, got to select who they were playing in the book. But I feel like I'd already seen the movie. However, what did spoil a large chunk of the last bit of Return of the Jedi was the Ewoks join the fight, which was sort of like a golden book that wasn't a golden book. And it was just about Wicket's role in Return of the Jedi.
Ah.
And, but you get to see there is a picture of the Death Star blowing up at the end and them all partying and stuff. So I didn't know about Luke, what was going on with Luke. And the Darth Vader thing, I remember just being like, this is it. Like, this is like, as like a very young boy, my moon landing, to see Darth Vader's face. Like, yeah. I remember, like, oh, yeah, as he was taking off, I was sort of just like, I can't believe this. I can't, they're going to show his face. And
now, did you think he was going to be just absolutely hideous under the helmet?
I couldn't even comprehend it. Like, I was just like, it was just too staggering for me to, like, it'd be like saying that, when Brad Pitt, you know, took off his face, you know, fake face to reveal that he's a lizard person, what did you imagine it was going to look like? It's like, oh, I couldn't even comprehend.
Right.
Hey, shout out to our Brad Pitt conspiracy theorists out there. We're getting to the pit of the truth.
Oh my gosh. Yes, you nailed it.
So what did you get up to after like Return of the Jedi? Like, were you celebrating your Star Wars fandom before the prequels came out?
Oh yeah. I mean, of course, after Jedi, you know, obviously I was still very young and was way into the toys for the longest time. And to the point where like some of my friends are like, oh, you still got toys, do you? And it's like, okay, so stupidly, I sold them all in a garage sale, which, ugh, dude, it just, I can remember the garage sale and it hurts my heart now. But anyway, I wasn't buying figures or anything like that leading up to the prequels, but I was, I tried reading, you know, some of the Star Wars books that were out there that this would have been pre what we refer to as the EU now. But there's some pretty crappy ones. There's a couple of cool Han Solo ones I'd read as a younger guy, but really not a ton. I watched the original trilogy on VHS probably a bazillion times leading up to, like, before they even announced there were going to be prequels.
Yeah, same. I remember they brought out the, like, the wide vision, like the, you know, like the 16 by 9.
Right.
Yeah,
right.
Letterbox. That's what I'm trying to think of.
Yeah.
And it was just like watching a whole new movie. Like, to have those edges. It was just like, oh,
I had no idea. I couldn't remember how much I was missing. And then you realize how crappy pan and scan is.
Yes. Yeah. I was like, yeah, it's, and it was always like people were like, oh, you're not getting, you're not using the whole TV. And it's like, you're not using the whole Star Wars.
Exactly.
What's worse? What's worse?
Exactly.
Do you remember how you found out how the prequels were coming out?
I think somebody that I was either in a band with or worked with told me. And my first reaction was like, yeah, whatever. And then I saw it on the internet.
Yeah.
I feel like that's how I found out.
I have no, again, like you were saying before, how your memories, you're not sure what's real or not. I feel like I was reading the EU, like Talon Karad, seeing what he's up to. Remember Talon Karad?
What books were that?
He was in the Thrawn trilogy.
Okay, yeah. I only read the first of the Thrawn trilogy.
Really? That's why'd you stop?
There's something about it that I'm like, and I don't remember what it was specifically. I should go back and read it and see. I bet I could pick up. Okay, this is where I'm like, yeah, I'm not buying this.
Yeah, I wouldn't. I wouldn't. Because, like, I loved them, but I felt like when I read them, I was in no position to question them.
Right, because that's all there was.
Yeah, I just, like when I watched Star Wars when I was younger, I didn't really question, like, it was not my place to question this movie. It's amazing. Like, I don't have things that it was all just perfect. That's why it's always so hard when people compare the different trilogies. It's just like, you know, when you watch it when you're a little kid, like maybe the culture's different now, but I feel like when you're like under 12 watching them for the first time, you're not judging. Like I thought the Ewok movies were like on par.
Oh, dude, I loved them. I loved those things. And I remember, and as far back as the holiday special, I remember seeing that as a young child and being devastated at the scene where the stormtrooper rips the head off of Lumpy Bantha. But what hurt more was when Lumpy comes in there and finds it.
Oh, yeah.
And he's like going and trying to put it back on. Dude, that crushed my heart as a kid because I could so empathize with it. And I was thankful to get that on the screen. Oh, and like when Mark Hamill was on the Muppets.
Yes.
Stuff like that. I was like, ooh, it was the best thing ever. R2-D2 and C-3PO were on Sesame Street. And I'm like, rad.
But yeah, so I feel like I was reading those and I'd fallen asleep on the couch. And then there was a news report about the Phantom Menace, and I heard it in my sleep, and I woke up.
Huh.
But I don't know if that's real or not.
Right.
But that's the amalgam of my memories of it, which is quite odd. I remember the TV we had. It was very old. No remote control. Buttons.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Buttons. We were not we were not early adopters to other forms of television. I remember. I don't think when I lived at home we had a remote control on the television.
We finally did when I got like a little older, closer to moving out. Now, we had a VCR, our first VCR, that had a corded remote control. And
we were post-cord.
You had to, like, the television channels, you could only have 12 of them, I want to say. And each push button for the channels on the VCR had a little tuning knob that you would use to get the channel that you wanted. And so you'd have them all set for whatever it was you wanted to record. And, oh my gosh, those were the days, man. Now, let me ask you this. How many times did you go see the re-releases of the original trilogy in the theater when they were out for their run?
I would have seen Star Wars like a dozen times. Like I saw it a lot. Because I was just like, this is my one chance.
Right, this is it, yeah.
And yeah. I guess I was right, because they never showed him again. Unless you go to one of those marathons or something. But yeah, I was like I was so into Star Wars leading up to the special edition. And it was just when... like your thirst wasn't quenched. Like there wasn't enough, like there wasn't enough new figures, and there wasn't enough like content. And it was like the prequels are still like a couple years away. So I was like, I am not wasting this time. And I got so annoyed that they wouldn't keep the three films on in the cinema at once.
Yep.
Like now. You couldn't do it. I'd imagined in my head that I could just manually go see the three of them in one day without them giving me a discount or whatever.
Right.
But by the time, I don't know if when Empire was on, Star Wars was still on, but I know that when Return of the Jedi was on, the other two were not on.
Right. So I don't know if this was a thing that the theaters were supposed to do. But when that came out, I had a job where I traveled and I was in some town, and that A New Hope and Empire were both in the theater at the same time. And I remember being like, yeah. And I went to see them both in one day, and it ruled, and it was the best thing ever. But I don't know if that was okay for them to do that. You know what I mean? Like, if that was a thing they were supposed to do, but they did, and I went and saw them both, and it was awesome. But yeah, Jedi was, by the time it was in the theater, the other two were long gone for sure.
I saw this thing in New York on the Bowery, which is sort of like, you know, a real arts district downtown. Like, we're all like, you know, sort of like where near Supreme is and all that. And it was this art gallery that my friend runs, and the exhibit seemed to just be that they played the three Star Wars movies at the same time.
Huh.
Now, I wasn't sure if that was art, but I did like it.
Were people there with monocles going, oh, yeah, that's a good show?
I think they would have had dad hats on and rolled up chinos. It's a different part of town, Eric. You're
gotcha.
You're far more uptown. So yeah, you're saying you read just one of those books. I don't know how you had you're very discerning to do that. I was working this really bad job at McDonald's at the time. Like, I was a store manager, and so you had, but your hours were terrible. Like, you'd start at like 6 in the morning one day, or for 2 days, and then your shifts will get later in the, like, mm-hmm. But it ruined your sleep pattern.
Oh yeah.
And reading those Heir to the Empire books was like my grasp at sanity was just because I was so tired that my life just became trying to learn how to manage at McDonald's, which is, I don't recommend it. I don't want to offend Horst Burkhardt's parents or anything like that, but it was not the lifestyle for me.
Yeah, that would be hard, man. I would think that'd be tough.
And also, like, you know, it was like decades too early to get the Happy Meal toys.
Yeah, what's the point of doing it if you can't go in and scope out all the good stuff?
Oh, so annoying. So annoying. So who was your guy or your girl or your droid? Or who is Eric?
Oh, Luke Skywalker. Front and back, all the way. From beginning to end, man. He was the dude. Luke Skywalker in the original trilogy was the thing. And when they announced the sequel trilogy, I was really excited to see what they were going to do with him. And I was not disappointed. I thought it was a really cool take on what they did. But yeah, he was always the one, man. In the scene in Empire where he called the saber to his hand, I was like, yep, that's it. He's the one. And then, of course, in Jedi, all the way from the beginning, the sail barge stuff and then the fight with Vader at the end. He was cemented as the coolest person ever.
Unquestionably. Like, yeah. That was one of those, like, that was like a truth of my youth. Like, John,
oh yeah, dude. And I know you go on about it, and I'm not saying this just to pander to you. This, when he gives the little salute and jumps off the thing, and dude, when I was young, because you know how for people who, I don't know, I assume it's like this for everybody, but like on the movie The Christmas Story, where Ralphie is imagining, you know, saving his family from Black Bart with his trusty rifle. Dude, that's how kids, like when I was a kid, I would fantasize about stuff like that, like saving my entire class from.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
Frigates. Really?
A Christmas Story.
The movie, A Christmas Story. It's this kid, Ralphie. He wants the BB gun. You're going to shoot your eye out, kid. They, on TBS, they'll show it like 24 hours a day on Christmas Eve, the entire day, just over and over again.
What era is it from?
It came out in the...
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Early to mid 80s, maybe? Hang on. Let me look. This is going to drive me crazy. But it's, dude, it's like a Christmas tradition. They show it. Every Christmas, you'll see it on cable, and it like I said, I think it's TBS. They show it 24 hours of A Christmas Story, and it's just over and over and over again.
Okay. Do you think on the Christmas Story podcast there, someone's talking about how Luke Skywalker reminds him of Ralphie, and the host is like, who's Luke Skywalker?
Maybe. Maybe so. But anyway, my whole point being is that I would imagine how dope it would be to like just save all my friends in that manner. But that's where the Christmas Story tie-in was, because that's what Ralphie would do, is imagine saving his family or his friends with his trusty Red Ryder single action something something BB gun. But
and like who's been your character in like the Disney era?
Rey, I would say, is the one. There's something about her journey that really, I don't know, speaks to me, I guess, of finding out what you're really, what your destiny is, what you're capable of, like late in life, I don't know, is sort of a very important thing to me, because that's kind of, it follows my personal journey of not really figuring out what I was meant to do until I was probably older than most. But yeah, man, I just think she's super cool. Plus she wields a lightsaber, so that just instantly sends the factor up to the millions. But I really, really, really like Kylo Ren slash Ben Solo. I thought that even from The Force Awakens, that what an interesting villain he was. I didn't relate to him, but he's one of my favorite parts of it.
Yeah, definitely. Do you think, like, in retrospect, that they should have made the character a bit softer, like, especially, like, in the first movie, like, with, like, being there to see the execution and like, the how he sort of, like, tortured Rey with the mind thing? Do you think that, in retrospect, is, like, probably should have dulled that down a little bit, or it's, like, it's the Star Wars universe and Darth Vader tortured Princess Leia and Luke Skywalker redeemed him?
I think it's that second thing, because you're right. It does it does make his eventual end a little bit harder to swallow. And that was one of the things, like, with the Reylo movement. I'm like, you people are insane, because and I don't think that now. I mean, I totally get it. But it's like he is he tortured her mentally and physically. That's not somebody you want to root for her ending up with, is somebody who's basically just abused her and all these things. And because it was pretty hard. But I think the move of having him remove his helmet whenever he's talking to her in The Force Awakens was good, because it revealed him as a person. And while his actions were very calculated, it made it to where it wasn't about her. There was, like, a weird calmness to it. Not a kindness, really, but a calmness that I think helped not make that so terrible.
Mm. Yeah. I reckon why not both? That little gif, you know?
Yeah. I mean, he did such a good job with it, too. And I love the whole petulant, you know, temper tantrums and all that. I think it really made his, like, conflicted nature really work out.
Yeah, because I remember even with The Force Awakens sort of going, oh, I wish we could have got a performance like that for Anakin Skywalker.
Mm-hmm.
Like a little bit more, I don't know, like foreshadowy. Like, I felt like sometimes the foreshadowing in the prequels was a little like, here's the foreshadowing bit, guys.
Right. Like, right. Yeah. Yeah. It did seem like it was kind of hitting you over the head, the sand people and their animals, and I slaughtered them like animals, and that whole bit when he loses it.
Yeah. Well, the sand people bit, I don't mind. But, like, it does put Padme, like, him confessing it to Padme puts her in an awkward position.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like, hey, guy that slaughtered that village, you're breaking my heart. Like, when the news goes to, like, to the neighborhood of, like, the guy that had, like, the House of Horrors or whatever, and the neighbors are like, oh, we had no idea. When people right. go to interview Anakin's neighbors, it's like, oh, yeah, he slaughtered a village.
He wouldn't shut up about it.
Oh, my God.
It's like he was hoping we'd tell him, oh, hey, look, really, it's no big deal.
What about background characters, Eric?
In the sequel trilogy?
Or just in the
or
whole...
just in general?
In gen.
It's
all Star Wars, buddy. I don't, why you got to keep them segregated?
Well, that's
yeah, you've been listening to too much Offspring.
That's what they should have called the song. I think, let me see. I always really liked, well, that's too much of a forefront character. I thought, and this sounds kind of dumb just based on the original trilogy, but Obi-Wan Kenobi is almost a side player once you get past A New Hope.
Mm.
And I liked what they did with him. And I always thought that was pretty cool. I thought that I thought Wedge was pretty cool when I was a kid. I wish that they not. I don't wish that they would have had a more featured part for him in the sequel trilogy, but I do wish he would have gotten in on it sooner. You know what I mean? like come back for The Force Awakens and then seeing him again in The Rise of Skywalker.
I think the internet report was he said it was too boring or something, but then it was like, oh no, I said I was already booked. Like I had, like he was already working.
Yeah, I can't remember what the score was on that. I feel like I had read that it wasn't a prominent enough part for him to bother coming in for something like that. But I mean, I don't know how true that is. You know how those things go.
Yeah, right? I remember like when I was real little, like when I was seeing them in the cinema, like I had no idea that Wedge was in all of them. Do you know what I mean? Like they,
right?
It was Luke Skywalker, Porkins, and other pilots.
Yeah. Dude, that little bit of Porkins that somebody put together the video where he's like got the big gulp in one hand and the burger in the other. Have you seen that? Oh God, it's so good. I really like the droids. I thought R2-D2, man, I would love to have one rolling around in the house. As a matter of fact, Stella and I, we watched Return of the Jedi yesterday and we were just talking about, I said, you know, one of these days I'll probably build a full-size R2-D2. And she's like, well, will you build me one too? And I said, I don't think you understand the cost that we're talking about here. This isn't something I'm just going to have a stack of hanging around. But I always really
just answer the question, Dad.
I don't want to see your bar graphs and pie charts. Just tell me you're going to give me an R2-D2. Tell her that if I ever learned to build one, I'd give her one for high school graduation.
You told her that?
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's a long way off, so she'll forget before then.
Perfect. That's a good strategy. I'll remember that when I'm making promises to Harrison. It's like,
there you go. I'm glad I could help.
Yeah. Just to schedule them like to come to fruition. Either they can't remember or they really won't want that then.
Right. Yeah. I'm sort of banking on that second one too. But you know, what are you going to do? I mean, if she'll probably love Star Wars for a really long time. I think it speaks to her the same way it spoke to me at her age and still does.
Now, what about your favorite scene?
Oy. Okay. Of all time, or just movie by movie, man, I'm just going to blast through him. In A New Hope.
Oh, God, he's gone into business for himself.
Yeah, in A New Hope, it's the run on the Death Star, specifically that last trench run. When Luke ends up switching his targeting computer off and blows up the Death Star. In Empire Strikes Back, my favorite scene is the attack on Hoth with the AT-ATs. To me, that was the coolest thing I'd ever seen. And all that snow and just the brightness of it was really cool. In Return of the Jedi, it is the very end of the duel with Vader when he's wailing away on him on the saber and then ends up cutting his hand off. That whole sequence right there, I would say, is that. The prequels, I'd have to sit and think about it longer. But in the sequel trilogy, man, Force Awakens when Rey calls the saber to her hand.
Mm.
I mean, dude, that can still just like bring me to tears. I remember sitting in the theater just... my eyes had to be huge, just blown away by what I was seeing. That was amazing. In The Last Jedi, it was Snoke getting cut in half.
Oh.
And specifically Snoke getting cut in half and the saber flying at Rey and her lifting up her hand and grabbing it in midair. That whole piece.
That's one sweet gif.
Yeah, it is. And then in The Rise of Skywalker... Oh, that's hard.
While you're pondering, the moment she catches the lightsaber was, I remember watching it for the first time and that it was like 10 seconds of pure joy. Like I was just so, like I was so shocked and then I was just like so delighted. It was like I was just like could not have been happier with what I was just like, this is the best.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's like if any doubts I've had about Disney taking over Lucasfilm were instantly squashed when that moment happened. Oh, my gosh, dude. I can picture it so well, and I can remember exactly what I was thinking at the time, and like just what Daisy Ridley, the emotion she put into that with her facial expressions. The Rise of Skywalker is tough. I haven't seen it enough times to really settle on it, but I love Adam Driver's performance with Harrison Ford.
Oh.
And everything he does after that has been Solo.
Yes.
Yeah, I can't say enough about it. He's so brilliant, man. And the fact that he didn't have any dialogue as Ben Solo, like how much he acted with his expressions and his like just his posture and body movement and facial expressions, man, he killed it. And it's part of what made it so good. And something that I never even made the connection to until we were watching Jedi yesterday was where he gets the saber in the saber handoff, you know, the Force saber handoff, and he does the little shrug.
Oh.
To the Knights of Ren, and then the shrug that Han Solo does whenever they tell him to, you know, the rebels are running through, you know, send out the reinforcements, and they're tricking him because Chewbacca's up in the AT-ST, and they come running out, and he's there and gives him the
another.
It made me think of another
sweet gif.
Yeah, it made me think of the two being connected, and that he's his father's son, you know.
And the look away shot from The Force Awakens.
Which one?
Like when Han does the look away shot on the stormtrooper at Maz's castle, and then Ben Solo does the same sort
shot. Yeah. Like, yeah, I gotcha. Yeah.
Like I was never a huge fan of the Han Solo look away shot, but Ben Solo redeemed it for me with the callback. Because now I'm just like, well, I'm happy to have that because the callback is too sweet. To quote Kevin Nash.
Oh, yeah, man. Oh, that was so good.
If you want to get multiple bonus Steel Wars episodes per week while supporting the podcast financially, please consider checking out the Steel Wars Patreon page at patreon.com/Steel Wars. You get access to our full podcast library with over 600 shows, as well as multiple weekly bonus shows, and that warm feeling that you're helping the podcast continue to put out content. Check it all out at patreon.com/Steel Wars. The link is in those show notes.
How many times have you seen The Rise of Skywalker now?
Three and a half times.
What's up with that halftime?
I got food poisoning.
Oh, buddy.
And I had to leave. I was, I was shivering and white. And I was just like, I'm going to begrudge this film for the rest of my life if I stay. Like, I'm not enjoying this at all. There was a second time I saw it. So I just had to tap out, and I just bolted home to bed, put on as many layers as possible, which apparently you're not meant to do, and just sweated it out in bed.
Yeah. Well, I was just getting over a stomach thing going in to see it the first time, the day it came out. And like it was going around in this area. And then my whole house was a place of sickness and grossness after me. Then it was Amanda and Henry, and my little girl dodged it all the way around. I don't know how she did it.
Big, big shout out to all the listeners eating over lunch, by the way.
Yes. Glad we could help out.
Having a good time. And one of those times I saw like the 4DX.
How was that? I haven't listened to Sardu yet, so.
Yeah, so yeah, we did a Patreon exclusive episode, Sardu, with the producer Rashad of our trip, but it was remarkably good. It was like the 3D was excellent. Sadly, no water on the Death Star.
Really?
No, oh, yeah. For people that don't know, this is like the 4D experience. Like the seats move around and there's wind. The Falcon, when it crashed, smelt like burnt metal.
Like a, really?
Yeah, like a soldering sort of smell.
That's dope.
And there was a lot of smoke. On the Death Star, I was like, oh, we're going to get drenched. This is going to be like a Gallagher concert or something. And dry as a bone. Dry as a bone. But super recommend doing it. And I want the film to be longer, but not when I'm in a 4DX seat.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it got a bit like I'm sitting on one side, then I'm like it got a bit uncomfortable by the end. But it was really fun. Really, really fun. So you're a rarity as from what I can tell, from someone that's in the 501st, in that you don't instantly tell every person you meet that you're in the 501st.
That is true. I do not.
So how'd you get into that? At what point?
So after The Force Awakens came out, it's like, okay, there's no point in hiding it now. I am all in for Star Wars. And sorry, Amanda. So my wife, she had never seen a single Star Wars movie all the way through until after we were married and after The Force Awakens came out. I'm like, all right, here's what's going to happen. And yeah, I said, I'm doing this. I've always wanted to build stormtrooper armor. Let's make this a thing. And I begged her to let me order this kit. I've always wanted to have stormtrooper armor. I thought that'd be the coolest thing ever. And my wife was surprisingly cool about it. After the initial shock of what's wrong with you and what have I gotten myself into? And what the 501st does with like the hospital visits and stuff like that, man, that is really cool. Now there's a lot of people in my 501st garrison that are a million times more involved than I am. I just, because of the age my kids are and like my job and playing in bands on the side, you know, being available to constantly go out on the weekends and do stormtrooper stuff just really isn't. It's not realistic for me, but I try to do whatever I can when I can. So
you need to get the kids like little Ewok costumes or something like that.
That would be great, man. That would be. Then the last time I went out was a thing for Halloween. And one of the kids, an adult child of one of the other people, they watched my kids run around. What Henry was in his Ghostbusters costume. Which was, you know, not particularly on brand for him. It totally is, but yeah, the Ewok costumes—that'd be great. That's a good idea.
Did he scare off Ghost Anakin Skywalker cosplayer? Or
he did, as a matter of fact. Oh my gosh, dude! I actually managed to get my entire family into a family costume for a function that my church does. But Amanda dressed up as Rey and my little girl was Princess Leia with the white gown and the buns. And Henry was, he claimed he was Luke Skywalker, but it was an old, young Anakin costume.
Ah, okay. He gets to decide, Eric, not you.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. But it was cool, man. It was good to see my wife finally, you know, come around and be into it.
Yeah. The so did she, is she seen like the last film and stuff?
Yeah, yeah. And she really liked it. I can't get her to go see it again, you know. Which I don't get. To me that's weird, but she's into it now.
Jackie has like she finds the rewatching of a film like that better be a long decade in between watches.
Yeah, Amanda's like that a little bit. Now there's some things that she can watch over and over again. She really likes Marvel movies. Yeah, she's probably watched Thor Ragnarok 20 times, but
that is a good one.
It is. Now she's way into The Mandalorian.
Oh, it's hot. Yeah. Jackie loves that as well. But like Jackie won't want to watch a film. Like she finds it weird to like continue, like, watch it sort of thing. But she will call for a watch from the start TV series rewatch just on the drop of a hat. We should rewatch Lost, should we? Like,
yeah.
That is a major commitment. We've got a child. We can't look after a child and a Lost rewatch concurrently.
Oh, my gosh, dude. Amanda's the same way with Parks and Recreation, which I don't mind. I love that show. But, yeah, we were just watching it, the entire thing, over and over again, probably three times straight through. Because, you know, just watching episodes when we'd sit down at dinner or whatever. And, but yeah, we haven't in a while. Ever since Disney Plus launched, we haven't been watching nearly as much Parks and Rec.
And she'll do the thing where we'll watch, like, Veep, right?
Uh-huh.
Like, we're pretty deep into it. We're, like, five or six seasons. But we haven't watched it for, like, 6 months. And so she's like, oh, we'll have to start from the beginning again. I'm, no! It's not... we don't need to follow the intricate storylines of Veep. But yes.
Oh my gosh!
Now, how'd you get into like podcasting and stuff? We haven't even spoken about, but this is the time to do it. But about your podcast, The Bad Motivators, one of my favorites, just turned 150.
Yeah.
But how did you get into like the world of downloading someone talking about Star Wars? Were you into podcasts first, or was it a search for someone talking about Star Wars that got you into podcasts?
I have been into podcasts for quite a while. Not super regular as far as a listener goes, but like there's a few, specifically music podcasts is what I'd typically listen to, because like I was way into this band, the Trans-Siberian Orchestra, and a guy was doing a podcast about that band and the production and all this. And like before that, a handful of comedy ones, but mostly music. That was always my thing, is music. And
on the music ones, right, like when I was first getting into podcasts and before I had one, like I became fascinated with the whole how it all worked and the just the medium of it. Mm-hmm. And I used to listen to, what was his name? Not Adam Carolla. There was like a guy called the Podfather, and he used to be on MTV. I think he hosted like some Headbangers Ball or something. Adam.
Okay, I know who you're talking about. Yeah, because he was like the metal expert or the music expert just in general.
Adam Curry.
Yeah.
So he was like, you know, this like he was like sort of pioneering the RSS feed that everyone was getting this stuff with. And he did this podcast called The Daily Source Code. And he would like promote podcasts and talk about his setup and all that sort of stuff. And he was very, they had this thing called the PodSafe Music Network, because it was, everyone was so worried about putting music, copyrighted music, mm-hmm. on a podcast.
Right.
Now, I don't listen to music podcasts at all, but do people still worry about that? Or do they just put music on the podcast and it's like ask for forgiveness?
It's more of an ask for forgiveness sort of thing, because it's as prevalent as stealing music became online. People became so desensitized to it that, and they feel like a lot of times they would, the format of a lot of the stuff I listened to was more of review based. So you wouldn't ever just have them just playing whole tracks with uninterrupted, to where you could be like, sweet, now I'm going to listen to this song over and over again. But yeah, people just do whatever they
yeah
want.
Okay. Yeah, because back then it was such a topic. Gotta make sure your music's pod safe,
right? Well, it's funny because like there was a podcast I listened to for a particular singer that I'm way into.
Oh god.
And who will remain unnamed, but this podcast, they would feature, every episode was about one song.
Mm-hmm.
And at the very beginning, they would have just the smallest lead in, where if it was me, it's like I would have ended the whole episode with that. But they were keeping it all on the up and up and being very legally safe about it, I guess. Which, I mean, kudos to them, you know. That's not how I roll. But, you know, I get it. I get it. It's not as big of a deal for people now.
So, yeah, get into how you got into, like, the whole Star Wars podcast thing.
So, after the announcement that Disney had bought Lucasfilm, it wasn't long after that when I started checking out Star Wars podcasts. And one of the first ones I listened to was probably like Rebel Force Radio, honestly, but Star Wars Underworld. Mm-hmm. I really liked those dudes, and it sort of stuck. And that's how I ended up finding out about a lot of other podcasts. Cause I mean, several just based on their names. Oh, that sounds cool. That sounds cool. And what I happen to be into. But yeah, I really like the Star Wars Underworld guys. And through them is how I found out about you or about Rogue One and stuff like that. Johnny's podcast. And but by then I'd been listening to podcasts for quite a while, just not as actively involved in the community. And the way I got started doing podcasts was as a Patreon supporter for the Underworld. This would have been during...
Well, you talked about this on the podcast the other day, about how it was when Ben Hart, needed like co-hosts for when Chris and Dom were in Europe.
Yeah.
At Celebration Europe, which was in London.
Right.
And so when you were talking about that, it was like it really... like connected with me because I was at the other end of that. I was recording the Star Wars Underworld episode with Dom and Chris
right.
in London.
Right.
So it was weird to hear the sliding doors-esque lives that we were leading.
It was wild because I remember I had done a podcast, like I got interviewed actually by the guy who did that Trans-Siberian Orchestra podcast because I do a tribute band for the thing. And he was using Blog Talk Radio. So I just called in on a phone. So when I did this show with Ben Hart, I had to ask him, so what should I use? What should I get? And I ended up going and like grabbing a gaming headset to do it. But then the first real podcast I did was the one where I got all the people together and we did that super long one for you where it was like the precursor to Strother's Wars. And I ended up... Yeah.
You didn't make Bad Motivators then?
Nope. Nope.
Oh, okay. Wow.
That Steel Wars was the first one. And I'm pretty sure. Yeah, because that was more than 150 weeks ago. I think so anyway. Yeah, I did that and I just happened to have I wouldn't have gone out and bought as nice of mic as what I use to do this if I did. I just had gear because I'm a musician. Mm-hmm. I already had stuff because I record at home, and so I was able to get pretty decent sound right off the get-go. And that was my first real experience at recording and editing a podcast, was doing that because I had tons of people on it and tons of clips, so it ended up being like 4 hours long, and so I got a lot of practice right away.
Yeah, so if you hadn't listened, it would have been December or January, December 2016, I think it would have been.
Yeah, December or January 2017.
No, 16. Yeah, or January 26th. But I feel like I went, because it was while I was on honeymoon.
Yeah.
And I feel like that was 2016, like that towards the end of the year. Because our honeymoon was like disjointed from our wedding. We went about our business for a year before deciding we needed a holiday.
Right. And so, as
a lovely gift, Eric sort of recorded a best of like thing with interviews and stuff. Was there quips in it or no?
Yeah.
There was. Okay.
Yeah. I had everybody pick one that they liked and put it together, organized it in secret and worked out times with everybody. And I kept getting the difference between the United States and Australia completely messed up.
Oh no.
Whenever we'd get ready to record. And I don't know how I was getting the math wrong. I think maybe I was, you're so used to everything being base 10 And but there's 12 hours in a day, not 10. It would be like, yeah, we're 17 hours ahead. And I'm like, okay, perfect. Well, if I do the math, blah, 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 and I'd end up being off 2 hours because I'm stupid.
And also because we're – I don't know if it would have added to it, but we're in daylight savings then. So, like, we're –
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so I don't know if that did. But, yeah, I got home from my honeymoon and had this lovely four hours of people saying nice to relatively nice things about the show.
Yeah, and that was actually the slant of it. It wasn't as much about the podcast as it was about you in particular. And as just a, hey, thanks for being awesome. Because we had the Steel Wars listener, Star Wars Safe Haven, whatever its official title is, mm-hmm. was pretty new at the time. And, you know, people were just real hip to kind of that atmosphere that you'd set up. And yeah, people were really willing to get on board with it.
Okay. It's weird in my memory. Like, it's very hard for me to remember pre Bad Motivators Eric.
It's hard for me to remember pre Bad Motivators Eric because seems like I've been doing it forever.
Like, I remember you, but I don't remember it as before you did the podcast.
Right. I gotcha.
Because we met at Celebration in Orlando.
Yeah.
So did you meet Dallas and Luke, who you do the podcast with? Did you meet them there, or did you already know them from online?
I knew them from online. And when we were at Celebration Orlando, those were like, that was episode 9 of the Bad Motivators. So we did like a 9.01, 9.02 of the days of Celebration there.
Gotcha. So, yeah, because in my head, that was before you did those episodes. That's what. So I'm, like, totally out of, like, my Struthers, like, timeline is, my Struthers canon is messed up, man.
That's okay. You tweet Pablo Hidalgo. He'll be able to set you straight on this. So, I was just looking it up. Those episodes that I recorded for you, you ended up putting them, at least on the Patreon feed, they're showing up like in March of 2017. So I gave it to you in January of 2017, I think.
I think that would just be setting up the Patreon.
Right.
I think
maybe that's it.
Yeah, there's probably like hundreds that were uploaded in March.
Yep, you're right. You're so right. So, well, now I'm all thrown off again. Regardless. Yeah. Regardless, that's around when it was. But yeah, I did that before I did the thing with the motivators for the first time. The thing with, I'm like trailing off because I'm trying to look at something. Where'd it go?
So you were like up to episode 9 of the Bad Motivators.
Yes.
Interesting. And so how did you meet those guys? Is it like on Twitter or something, or?
So I met Luke when I was a guest on Rogue One, a Star Wars podcast for winners, and Luke was the other guest because Johnny was doing a thing that was like people who were contributing to the show. And I had done the, I can't remember if I made their current theme by that point, but I'd done a couple of things for them. And, Luke had done like some, album artwork for him. Uh-huh. So he had us on and we met like that, and Cruiser hit me up and started hounding me about that we should start a podcast. And I'm like, yeah, man. And we both ended up weirdly. It's so crazy that this is the case now, because boy, if I could go back and change time, we both brought up Dallas, because at the time he'd done some guest spots like on the Sith list and he was killing it, man. We like, we ought to see what this dude's up to. And, yeah, we got him on, and that's been that.
And so it's so like, so you guys are like fast friends now, having talked to each other for an hour every week, 150 times.
Yeah. Yeah, man. We're really close. You know what? My family, we went on vacation. Well, actually, let me back that up. When The Last Jedi came out, Luke and Dallas both came to St. Louis and hung out. We went to see the movie together and did a podcast about it the weekend that it came out, and they stuck around and caught my band, caught a show, and And then when my family and I went on vacation, there's a pretty cool children's museum in Indianapolis, Indiana. And we went there, and Luke Cruiser lives close to there. And we went and cooked out with him and swam in the pool. And yeah, it's in all because of podcasting and Star Wars.
I'm always confused by the children's museum, Eric. Like there's one that we saw the other day. It was closed. But we're like, is this a museum of children or a museum for children?
That's like, a great question.
Like, is it a museum to, like, appeal to children, or is it great children throughout history?
Well, you know, it's to appeal to children, but you really bring up a good point, because, like, an art museum isn't a museum that appeals to art.
No.
It is a museum of art.
Yes!
So, yeah. Yeah. That's like, you know what? You just blew my mind.
Yeah, like at the Natural History Museum, like there's not like elephants in there taking in the exhibits.
Right. Mastodons in there with their cameras around their necks.
They love taking photos. So I remember like meeting you at Orlando, and before like you texting me and like, are we gonna be in that? And just like going, oh my god, I hope this guy's normal.
Man, you sure? I'm sorry to disappoint you.
I think you're the most normal one, but yeah, I remember just like going, this is gonna be really awkward if we don't like get along.
Right. Do you remember the first words you said to me in person?
I think it would have been about your hair. It would have had to have been about the hair.
Actually, no.
Oh.
It was, we're sitting there and we're in the line, we're in the queue already. And Dom and Chris are all right there.
What, in the we're queue? In the queue at Celebration?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. So that's when we first met, like after I'd got everything. Like,
yeah.
Okay.
And so you sit down and you look over at me and you're like, oh, I got to get used to your voice coming out of your face. I'm like, fair enough, man. Fair enough.
But you've got the Struthers voice.
And I do.
And it's like, I get that when I listen to a podcast and I meet them. And I'm just like if I've listened to it a lot. And like, I think it's like, if they don't, like their album artwork isn't their face. Or so, like you don't like connect it. And so when I like watch people talk, I'm just like, this is fascinating. Like, this is so surreal.
Yep. There's a thing.
It's weird. Like now, when you say it, I'm like, I remember that. But it's so something that I would just say to someone when I first meet them that it's like, I can't. That's too on brand for someone to make up that I'd said. So how was that whole experience of sort of, I guess, like, prior to going to that celebration, like, had you met anyone in person?
No, not a single person. I flew down there completely on my own. I had, because of the Star Wars Underworld guys, I had hooked up with them in this housing, that this Airbnb that Dom or one of them put together.
Oh, my God. Oh,
yeah.
You've just cracked open a world of memories that...
Yeah. And I hadn't met anybody. Now, I did actually fly down. A couple of dudes in my 501st garrison were on the same flight as me, and we ended up like sitting together on Southwest Airlines flight. And but yeah, I went down there on my own and just, you know, hooked up with people that I had knew from online, and it was like we'd been friends in real life forever. It was like not weird in the least.
And, of course, very infamously, you did the sound at, you know, the big live podcast we all had. Now, I like when we got to the erotic fan fiction segment, like, you know, first time I've ever met you, first week I've ever met you, but and I like, I know that like you're really involved with your church and stuff. And I was sort of like, I don't know how, like, I hope midway through it, I'm like, oh, I hope this goes down okay with Eric, that he's like not using his talents to get the sound out and he's against what's coming out the speaker.
No, you don't know. And I totally get it. Usually, and this sounds terrible, what I'll do a lot of times whenever I meet somebody and we're talking and the subject of me working at a church comes up, they'll instantly, I can see it in their eyes. They're thinking, oh, what have I said up till now? Oh, crap. And so what I'll always do is just throw in a well-placed F-bomb here or there just to let them know I'm cool. Don't worry about it. But you know what I mean? To make them comfortable. But no, I totally get it. Dude, that night. So that venue was not, the way we set up in there was not, it wasn't what that sound system was invented for. And it was like, we were down to the wire, and how to interface with their system was, it, we just sort of lucked out. We had these headphone extension cords that Randy had bought at CVS that were like spiraled, you know, stretched as far as they would go, going out this door, plugged into these RCA jacks on the patio. And it's like, if they moved the door just wrong, it would come unplugged. Oh. And the speakers were right above us, pointing straight down. And it was like feedback central. It was so hard. And I was so tired, too. But it was so worth it, man. It really turned out good. People had a great time there.
It was one of the all-time evenings. That was so fun.
Yeah.
People were like, just so happy. I think I felt like it was like the first time all these people had met, and and it was sort of like, even, oh, you're, you know,
right,
Darth Maul Slays on Twitter, you know, like it was
right.
It was like people were just like beaming. It was a good time. It was a good time for Star Wars fandom. But yeah, that place was not. Like, let's be honest, few sound systems are designed to broadcast what we were saying.
Yeah, good point. Good point. But oh, my gosh.
There's those photos of us doing the show, and then you're in the background. And, yeah, some people said, oh, why is that guy so miserable? Why is, like, and it's like, I know, he's very tired and concentrating on the spider web of chords.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. So we had, I flew down there, but one of the guys in our 501st garrison, he would basically rent space in his trailer so people could haul their armor down there and all that stuff. And I ended up taking like a big plastic tote with a mixing board and tons of cables. And we had like just enough cabling where I could only get so far away. You know, that's why it was such a problem getting the thing out the door, too. And it's like, oh, my God. And it was, I was so tired. Because here's the thing, man. That was like my first convention ever. And I didn't want to miss anything. So I did both overnight lines the first 2 days.
Don't want to miss that 3 a.m. DJ slot.
Oh, yeah. That was so sweet. And the big lightsaber battle, too. And so I slept like maybe 90 minutes in between first day and second day. And, yeah, it was a long few days, but dude, it was the best of times. Oh my gosh, it was the best of times.
Oh yeah, that was the best of times. That was one of the all-time weekends. Yeah, so good. So like, did that sort of cement your Star Wars-ness after that, sort of meeting everyone? And
it did. And because I knew this is something that I'm going to want to do every time one of these comes up, and just spending the time with the people, and something I really like doing, and something that I did quite a bit in Chicago, was just trying to talk to just about anybody I'd meet about what their experience was and what they thought of it, and just get their take on it. I find that super interesting, but just to make so many friends too, that's what's a blast.
So were you, as a veteran of two of those lines back to back, half an hour's sleep, when they announced that wasn't going to be happening last year, what emotions did you feel?
It was a mixed bag, honestly. because here's the thing. And I will say, it really worked out that now, looking back, my group did terribly in the panel lottery.
Uh-huh.
Terribly. And at first I was not mad, but I was disappointed. And, you know, because lots of people were getting where they were in the main auditorium for three of them, and we got none, and we got the smallest overflow room, the deepest overflow room for the Mandalorian panel.
Yeah. But I hope they change some algorithm to you don't go back into the drawer until everyone else has won one of their picks or something. Cause it's that was it's sweet. Uh-huh. You know, I'd want to get the clean sweep. Don't get me wrong.
Oh, sure. Who wouldn't?
Yeah, but it's sort of, it was a bit of a weird thing when you talk to someone that got none, and then it's like, oh, yeah, we're into four things.
We referred to the group as the Australians, but Chapman and Catherine Neen and Turbo and Andy Campbell and Steph, they did really well. And I kept teasing them every time we'd pause the cast together. I'm like, you come here to my country and you steal all my panels. But here's the thing. My whole point with this is it was a relief in the long run, because if there had been an overnight queue, I would have done it. Mm. And the fact that it was taken out of the equation, and then realizing that it wasn't the end of the world when I wasn't in the panel, it took a lot of the pressure off it, and I was able to just really just chill out and enjoy the thing. And, you know, because the idea of the overnight line is that if you want it bad enough, you'll get in. Mm. More or less. They kind of screwed that up in Orlando when people who waited overnight didn't get in, which sort of sucks. But yeah, I'm glad I didn't have to do it. It actually enhanced my enjoyment of the entire thing.
Yeah, I feel like the Orlando panels, like that 40th year one, like nothing at the last celebration sort of like touched that.
Right. Well, because I can say this, man, looking back, being in the room for the 40th anniversary panel when John Williams was behind that curtain in Orlando. Mm-hmm. I would not be willing to give up that experience for lots of scenarios. If I could give you, of course, like $1 million, I probably would. But you know what I'm saying? That was such a high point, not just in my fandom, but just in my life in general, being there with John Williams playing Leia's theme leading off. How great of a moment that was. None of the panels in Celebration Chicago were even remotely close to that, to the gravity of it.
Yeah. And you know, there was that panel had so many like moments, like, like, you know, there was like George getting brought out straight away, Billie Lord doing, you know, her like dedication, and then, you know, John Williams and all that. But one thing you've mentioned a few times that, you know, you're in a band and all that stuff, but your fandom leads far more into like music than it does for me. Mm-hmm. So like, how was that to see the dude that wrote it and conceived it playing it? How far away were you from where he was?
I was pretty far. I would say I was in the back, the very beginning of the back third of the seats, if that makes any sense. Mm-hmm. So I'm pretty far back there, and I was on the opposite side of the room from where he was. So I was way like auditorium left. Got but you. It didn't matter. It honestly didn't matter a bit, because I could hear everything perfectly. Like even when he turned around and shushed us all, you know, and it was such a big deal. Oh my gosh, it's like gives me chills just thinking about it. Whenever the opening strains of the strings opened up, and I'm like, nuh-uh. And instantly the whole room went dead silent and people are crying. And it was magic, man. That was a major deal for me. That's the thing I would tell everybody. How was Celebration? Let me tell you. That was a home run. Home run.
Oh, yeah, that was like beyond imagination. Mm-hmm. Like it was so, how is he here on the carpet just there?
And how did nobody know? How did nobody leak this, because, you know, there's like, oh man, I heard George is going to be there and I bet we'll get this and I'll bet we'll get that. But nobody said, I bet John Williams is going to be hiding behind a curtain with a freaking orchestra and it's going to play four songs. Nobody said that.
Yeah. In classic Saunders style, I did look at those curtains and go, should have put a screen up there. Like, I'm always critiquing the events, and I'm like, why is it just a curtain there?
That's a waste.
Put a screen. Or an orchestra.
Yeah. You know what you could have put back there? Oh, my gosh, dude.
So when you, like, watch the films, like, when you watch Rise of Skywalker, like, I don't even think the music's... I don't know, this time around, no, it did kick in with me on a few of the later screenings, but normally I don't, like, when people comment on the music and I've only seen it once, I've got no idea what they're talking about.
Right.
Like, it's just not, like, I'm trying to take in all this stuff and the hearing gets, like, I don't put that in my priority list.
Right, I gotcha.
Like, I'm trying to take in the story and the lines and then, like, look at cool stuff in the background. But, like, when you first see it, like, how much is your appraisal based, like, on the music?
So for The Force Awakens, it was a major component of it, because and this is not a slight to John Williams in by any stretch of the imagination.
Here we go.
But the amount of new, like, major themes going into The Last Jedi and then into The Rise of Skywalker, rightfully so. There's a lot of reusing of this, and this, because this is Rey's theme, this is the Resistance theme, this is all this stuff. But with The Force Awakens, hearing, like, Kylo Ren's theme, and Rey's theme and the March of the Resistance, that stuff stuck out to me so hard right away. And it was like such a thing for me that I would listen to the soundtrack afterwards. Because, man, I saw The Force Awakens in theaters, I think, like 17 times, something like that. But I would listen to the soundtrack and it would put me right in the movie. I could tell you exactly what part this was in, and, like, the dialogue would just fill itself into my head. It's made that much of an impact.
Yeah, right. I remember, like, the Kylo Ren when he arrived in that dun, 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 dun. Uh-huh. Like,
wah, 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 wah.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
That's all right.
I'm no David Collins with my little my little piano here. Yeah. And the I love, Ray's theme. Like, like, I remember being in my kitchen in Australia, just whistling that while I cleaned the house, like, that my, like, mouth was sore from the... Not musical at all.
It's all right, buddy.
So, I know you're a big fan of David Collins and his podcast. Like, how much of that stuff, like, it's gobbledygook to me. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? Like, all that, like, about, like, the, you know, I don't even know if this is, like, 4x4 or, okay, all that stuff is, like...
Right.
I have no idea, right? But, like, how they can, like, slow down or change the key or something and it becomes another character's, like, thing. Like, give us an example of one of those things. Is like...
So, okay, if you listen to, and I picked this up not on the first time I saw The Phantom Menace, but the second time, because leading up to The Phantom Menace, I had obviously watching the original trilogy a lot anyway. And when you hear, like, the Emperor's theme in Jedi, it's da 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 da, right?
You do that pretty good.
Thank you. I couldn't get those lowest notes, they're out of my range. But then when you get to the end of The Phantom Menace and he's like, I'll be watching your career with great interest, you get the choir that sings it's the exact same interval leaps except in a major key instead of minor. And, you know, they show the side shot of Palps there when that's going on. And I'm like, oh man, I see what you just did right there. To me, that was genius.
So what do you think that, like, I still don't really get it. Like, I'm not questioning it.
Mm-hmm. Right, right, right.
But, like, my comprehension, I'm just like, oh yeah, that, like, is that bizarre to you that I'm?
No, not at all. Because I mean, it's just a language that I speak. You know what I mean? Uh-huh. And like John Williams, his connection to music, it's almost like he sees it, not just hears it. It's almost like the oral part of it becomes a visual part for him. And what happens is he doesn't want the average person to notice that. What happens is you're subconsciously, you'll make a connection between the two without realizing you're making it. And that's what his goal is.
God, it's like he's musically subtweeting me.
Basically, yeah. Yeah, that's exactly what he's doing. And so I get it when people don't get into that. And it's like what music is supposed to do. The understanding of it from an academic level is not even remotely critical to the enjoyment of it at all. And it's more of an explanation in hindsight, where a lot of the stuff that you realize, like if you listen to David W. Collins' podcast, I love the soundtrack show. He's fantastic at it. A lot of the stuff, and I think he'd probably say the same thing, it's easy to see when you analyze it later, but did the composer mean to do this? Probably not on a conscious level, but on a subconscious level of really trying to tell this story through the music, that's why it ends up being the way it is. But I think like the Palpatine theme, I think that was definitely intentional, which is brilliant in its own right. But he doesn't want people to understand it at that level. He wants people to, what music is supposed to do is explain to you how to feel. And that's what it's there for. It's like the audience laugh track in early sitcoms. It's to let you know, okay, this part's funny, laugh. But it's the music is there to let you know how you're supposed to feel about a situation. That's why in the trailer for The Rise of Skywalker, when you're getting the music that goes along with C-3PO saying, taking one last look at my friends, it's like this gut-wrenching moment. But when then you see it in the movie, it's completely different feel.
Yeah.
And you're not even worried for a second that C-3PO is not going to be okay, because they're instantly joking about it. And the music behind it's different. But the music in the trailer explains to you how to feel at that moment.
Yeah, it's so weird. It's so jarring how different it is. Mm-hmm. And how, like, in my opinion, it's way better in the trailer.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Because the moment wasn't the same, and it wasn't intended to be the same. I think in the trailer, what they're really trying to do is let you know that you're taking one last look at the friends you've made in these movies. That you're C-3PO in this case. You're supposed to feel sad because you're taking
one last
look. How
dare you?
You're taking one last look at these characters that you've come to call your friends and over all these years. And that's what they wanted you to feel like. It was less about him and more about the viewer.
It's almost like that scene is when you tweet your opinion of a new Star Wars film. And you're like, I'm just going to take one last look at all my friends. And then you say your opinion and, you know, half of them are now annoyed at you.
And then it's all the comments and all the retweets are Poe going, this is going to be a problem. That's
So, hey, how did you feel in The Rise of Skywalker with... We were talking about before about Kylo Ren and like his redemption, because, you know, we're talking about before you like work at a church and you're someone that's talked about in the podcast. You've had a bit of a redemptive life. You've changed your life around. How does that sort of relate to Star Wars?
Well, I like to think that it's, in most cases, it's never too late to change your path. Now, whether or not you can be absolved in the eyes of others is pretty hard to say. You know, like, can I buy that Kylo Ren has thrown away his old self and become the person he was born as. You know what I mean? Sure, I can take that. But do I think there'd ever be a scenario where he could go and hang out with everybody like Poe and Finn and be like, hey, man, my bad. And they'd be like, oh, it's all right, bro. We get it. I think that's where the
damn that Snoke. It wasn't even Snoke.
That guy. Oh, what are you going to do? And so in that respect, I'm cool with it. You know what I mean? But I think in the real world, it would be like, I don't know, insert insane person or, you know, psycho murderer here who suddenly sees the error of his ways. You did the crime, you do the time. That's just sort of the thing.
Yeah, but it's not the real world. It's right. Something that it can't be stated enough.
Apparently it needs to be stated more because people keep forgetting.
Yeah, it's interesting because I was like, you know, I found The Rise of Skywalker just as a film. The whole experience I found disappointing.
Yeah.
Like, so there's parts of the film that I just love, but, you know, like, I just can't argue it. Like, do you know what I mean? I didn't come out like punching in the sky. You know, I remember driving home from Return of the Jedi. I was pretty fired up. I was beatboxing my own Yub Nub lyrics and driving my mum up the wall. But like when you look at all the films, like now, like in with like the modern lens, like I was sort of thinking about it, and because I really like the message of Rey being a no one and stuff, and I was sort of thinking, well, maybe how people have expectations of like things happening in the plot. Like, maybe my expectations were too high for what the movie was going to say.
Right. I understand where you're coming from. But at the same time, I mean, I was a big fan of the Rey being nobody. I thought that made it, I don't know, it just felt right. It felt like it was just proof that anybody is capable of changing the world, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And to have it be... I understand why they did what they did, but it just felt so messy. And that's a word I keep hearing people tossing around. I mean, just something as simple as we end the Last Jedi with the kids playing, telling the story of here's Luke Skywalker, this little doll he made standing in front of this thing. And it's already has spread like wildfire that Luke Skywalker saved the galaxy. And then we start... And, you know, we're a year ahead in the future and nobody, it like doesn't seem to be a thing.
Yeah.
Nobody's talking about it.
But I was sort of thinking about how we look at it with like modern eyes and like abusive relationships and stuff. But then like so people sort of like, oh, how can you sort of sell, you know, how can you like Ben Solo when he did all this stuff?
Right.
And it's like, but you love Anakin Skywalker.
There is that, yeah.
And, you know, it's sort of in reverse that he got worse as he went along.
Right,
but
right.
Like, yeah, I don't know. It's weird. Like, I never heard anyone in, like, all the years of Star Wars fandom sort of complain that, like, Luke sort of redeemed his dad or, you know, for, you know, do you know what I mean, brought him back to the light and sort of gave him his love. Like, I never heard anyone complain about that. But yeah, it's just like I was sort of trying to weigh up whether like am I expectations too much for what this was going to say.
I don't think so, honestly, because you know the accusation has always been there that they were just trying to retread the original trilogy or aspects of it. And it's the original trilogy managed to pull it off. So why didn't this? I mean, my take on it is I love the movie as it was fun to watch it. It was neat, but it's certainly not the best. There it is again. Yeah. It's certainly not the best Star Wars movie ever. And, you know, here we are. It's been in theaters, what, like, what's today? Getting close to 3 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty close. And I've only seen it three times. That's unheard of compared to the last two movies and Rogue One and Solo, quite frankly. I am going to see it tomorrow with my dad, which is kind of neat. But I don't, in my head, it's because I've been too busy. But I think, honestly, deep down, a big part of it is it's because I'm just not as stoked on, oh my gosh, I got to see this as many times as possible in the theater. Because I don't, I'm not, like, it didn't blow my mind. I didn't leave there going, yes, I feel so fulfilled and everything's tied up just right. I'm not, that's not me at all.
So that's like when I went to see it the next time, I was just like, just watch the starships. They pass the laser sword using space magic. It's awesome.
Right, right. Well, and that sort of, so I saw it twice in a row on the night it opened. And the first time, I mean, it's hurtling through all of the, like, the first act and a half. And I was like, this is almost too much. I don't know what I'm going to do with this. I don't know how I feel about this. Wait, what's going on now? And watching it immediately after, I was able to look at it a little differently. But I can say that, you know, when you talk about whether or not your expectations were too high, there were definite threads that were started and let go, and definite things that happened that were kind of out of nowhere. And I can't believe I'm going to attribute this to Chris Fresh, but, you know, something he mentioned is, like, you can't just say Palpatine's back in the crawl and have that be it. So how did that happen? You can't just put it in the crawl. That doesn't count. And I mean, but it's aspects like that that, yeah. How did this happen? How did Snoke end up in power? How did any of this happen? That kind of thing. But yeah. I mean, they set it up and didn't walk a lot of it through.
Yeah. And, like, everyone's got different levels of what they want explained and stuff. Like, you know, people were, you know, sort of upset about Snoke dying without the backstory and that. But, and I thought it was fine. Like, I anything about Snoke I love. But back from the dead.
The dead speak.
Like, come on.
Yeah.
Give us a shout out. I don't need random theories thrown out from Charlie from Lost. I want some hard facts. I want to know.
Yeah. Yeah. And here's one thing I can say, though, because it seems like, and I don't mean this as a derogatory term, but, like, the casuals, the more casual people who, yeah, I like Star Wars. I got a Star Wars shirt from Target once. It's pretty neat. That sort of thing. They seem to love the movie.
I thought you meant people that, like, wore Crocs to the cinema.
Oh, good Lord. No, those there. You can't even talk to those people.
Don't be like that about Corey. Come on.
Dude, I love Corey. But they seem to love the movie. My dad, who's in his 70s, has already seen it twice. My dad is not a, hey, let's go see the same movie two times, unless he's wanting to hang out with me. You know what I'm saying?
Uh-huh.
But he's really totally dug it, and which surprised me because he did not like The Last Jedi much, I don't think.
Yeah, I think, like, spectacle-wise, it's quite the spectacle.
Yes. Yes, it is. It definitely is.
Well, the other bit of fandom that you're all over the place, Eric, with all the things you do. But one thing we haven't touched on, which is now very close to my heart, is your saber building. Now, what's up with this? This just sounds like another hobby you developed purely to frustrate your wife.
Well, it definitely has frustrated her. I've got a stack of empty hilts behind me that I need to convert into cash. And I know she's been like, when are you going to make this happen? So it's something that I've always thought lightsabers were the coolest. That's one of the coolest things about Star Wars. And
some might say they're neat.
They're quite neat. I do say that too much. But
no, just the perfect amount.
Yeah. But my background is in electrical engineering. and I worked a lot in electronics and industrial automation and that sort of thing. And so when I realized that there were lightsabers out there that were more accurate and cooler than like the toys you could buy at Target, like even the really nice Black Series sabers, I was like, well, what's this all about? So I reach out to this guy that I saw on some like Star Wars documentary who's builds lightsabers, and it took him forever to get back to me. And he's like, oh, well, what you need to do is this, because he like custom makes, like cuts pipes into shapes and hilts and stuff. So anyhow, I start looking into it and find out there's this whole subculture of it. And I was like, I have the skill set to do that. And how dope would it be if I built my own lightsaber? And it just stuck, man, because I enjoy doing it, because I enjoy what the product's going to be. And holding, like, the very first lightsaber I built was the classic, you know, Luke Skywalker from A New Hope lightsaber. And when I even every time I look at it, I'm like, oh, it's so cool. As a matter of fact, I have it on a lightsaber stand on my bedside table.
Don't break into that house.
Home security. That's right. You got it.
So how do they even – so I've got one here, which we'll talk about in a sec. But, like, how do you get all the shapes?
Like, as far as the hilt itself?
Yeah, like, so I've got the Jedi Luke one, and it's – you know, then it's got, like, the emitter, then there's a copper bit, and then there's the black bit with all the lines that really say which lightsaber it is. Like, how did they all get there?
So, okay, so fortunately, there's enough of a subculture of this where companies, basically like one-man companies, will engineer a hilt kit and then find somebody who can produce it for them. And so, like, in that case, everything that's in that is the hilt was from this kit. Now, what's cool, I mean, you have to modify a lot of the stuff to get it to work out the way you want. But all in all, a lot of that hard work is done for you. The biggest part comes in the electronics. That's where all the work ends up being. But like, what's cool about this, most of the hilts I get are from this guy who calls himself Corbanth, and like Corbanth.com, Corbanth with a K. And he has some really cool hilts. And in this particular one, that Luke one, it comes with a bunch of different interchangeable parts. So, like, if you wanted it to where what you have right there is it's called an LS6. That's the model of the hilt for Luke Skywalker Episode 6. And it's in hero configuration, which is where anytime they show the saber up super close, it's the fancy one.
Uh-huh.
And, like, when you see when Darth Vader is holding it when they're having the father-son cookout on that deck, that's the configuration it's in. Mm-hmm. But when you see it like in his hand on the skiffs, it's in another configuration. But it comes with all the parts that you can make it be whichever one you want. But
that's okay. Because on the skiff, it's like rubber or something. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And so the part which what they would call the clamp section where the LEDs are on yours, the red and the green one.
Uh-huh.
That one's on the skiff. It's shaped more like the one, like the Luke Skywalker original lightsaber. It's more of a clamp like that. And the bottom of it's different.
God, you're a real nerd.
Dude, I'm so nerdy. Yeah.
So how many do you have that are your keepers?
Okay. So right now, I have three sabers that I've built for me. Well, two of them, they're my kids now, but one for myself. And then I've got all the parts to make a Kylo Ren saber. Well, most of the parts. I've got enough parts to make one like what you have in your hand. And I've got several other hilts that are just waiting for me to decide to do something with them. Like I have an Obi-Wan Kenobi from Episode 4 that I need to build, and which looks quite a bit like that Luke Skywalker lightsaber, if I do say so.
And just comparatively, how many guitars do you own?
Like 22.
Oh my God.
Yeah. Yeah. They're all next to me over here.
Wow.
In cases. Yeah, I have acres of guitars. And it's dumb. I'm not going to lie. It's dumb to have that many guitars.
God, I'm glad all your like mental hoarding issues are not just segregated to like one part of your hobbies.
Right. Yeah. No, it's definitely not. I always thought having a lot of guitars was cool, but now that I do, I realize I have guitars that are really nice that I haven't played in years. And they're sitting there with gross strings on them. They need to be clean. They need to be this and that. But it's like, I play gigs all the time and I'm using like three guitars.
Yeah,
and the other 20 some odd sit at home, never getting played. So yeah, it is sort of dumb. But lightsabers, now that's totally different. There's you can use them every day.
You're a real General Grievous about it.
Yeah. That's right. That's exactly right.
Now, you did a very kind thing. I'm quite blown away. The Luke Jedi lightsaber has always been like the one and the only one that I've ever wanted. And I sort of slept on getting those EFX ones. And then they like soared up in price, mm-hmm. like the one that you could open up and stuff. Like,
right.
And then there's other ones that I had eBay searches and they're like, they're just not in, they're not at a fun amount. Like if I bought it, it'd be like,
right.
Like I'd resent it.
Right. Yeah. And I totally understand. I totally get it.
You cost me so much, Saber. Then it'd be like, oh, I can't stay mad at you. Hug him in bed. Yeah, so the Jedi Luke thing. I tell you, this EFX, do you know that company? Is it EFX? Uh-huh. Yeah.
Yeah.
They announced 4 years ago at Comic-Con that they're going to do these lightsaber double packs. And then each year they just fade away. And then I asked them about it, and they were not happy about my question.
I never said that.
You just sort of mum. You and you ask someone something and you immediately regret it. Like,
when I asked my boss if I could have a raise.
I was trying to give him a raise, but you know, it's very different. But so Rashad brought this around, and it's you made it for me with the help of a bunch of our friends. So it's Sorry, I'm just sort of looking at it. It's amazing. So I just want to say thanks so much for that.
So where the idea for this came, I just want to throw this out there, man, is whenever I was like at Celebration interviewing people and just guests we've had on the Bad Motivators and all this stuff, a common theme that kept coming up was, man, you realize if it wasn't for Steel, a lot of us wouldn't even know each other. But because of the community that formed around his podcast and just stuff that he does, and I'm like, oh, my God, it's enough, man. I get it. He's great, blah, blah, blah. But I thought, man, you know what would be really cool? Because seriously, it was a super common thread of if it wasn't for Steel Saunders, most of us wouldn't know each other. And it's true. It's actually true. And I blame you for some of the people I know that I'm mad about. But what I did is I reached out to a bunch of people and said, hey, would you be interested in contributing to this? And donate my time and then whatever else we need to make this happen. And so here's a list of people who jumped in to help make this lightsaber happen. Tim Dunlap was the superstar of this thing. Our buddy Rashad. Gee. And Rebecca Edwards.
Nice.
She's awesome. Andy Campbell. Heard Brittany Brown from the Cantabite Dispatch. Blake Mumaw.
No, she's from downtown.
Downtown, Brittany Brown, yeah. And our buddy Blake Mumaw, who does a great Eric Strahler's impersonation.
Oh, my God. I was telling Jackie about how good Blake's Eric Strahler's impersonation is last night.
It is pretty good, I got to say. Like, I was listening to a show, and I was like, I don't remember being on this. Oh, wait, it's him. Oh, my gosh. Johnny Grasso.
Ah.
Yeah. Turbo, Matthew Thurman.
Nice.
Hawes Burkhart.
Ah, I've heard of him.
Dom Legaspi.
Heard of him.
Luke Cruiser.
The Cruiser.
Catherine Neen.
Ah, the most delightful.
Yeah, she's awesome. Chris Hall. Emily Lind.
Ah, which is weird because she's always bad mouthing me.
Yeah. Oh, dude, she was very begrudging. Gave me this money. She's like, I'm going to give this to you to do this just so that I can hold it over his head. That's exactly what she said. And I'm like, hey, whatever your motivation is, that's fine with me. Iraj Dilshahi.
Nice.
Matt Grant from Blue Bantha Milk.
Love him.
Josh Chapman from Star Wars Spelt Out, but really he's more famous for his Peppa Pig podcast, along with his co-host on that, our buddy Matt Frost.
Frosty.
King Tom.
Oh.
Brandon Baker.
Oh.
Robbo.
Oh.
Yeah, Les Gonzalez.
Oh.
Jessica Schrader.
Nice.
And Dallas Wood.
Wow. Well, yeah, thank you, everyone. I absolutely cherish it. It is one of those things. Like I'm doing a bit of start of the year cleaning out the cupboards and trying to get my office all set for the new year.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like I'm going to create a bit of a Luke Skywalker shrine, a Luke Skywalker Return of the Jedi shrine on my first shelf up here. So I just need that. I just need that signed picture. I need the one of him like holding the lightsaber from that book on the deck.
Yeah.
Red thing. That's
yes.
That is the Luke Skywalker photo, I feel. So it'll happen. We've come so close.
Yeah.
We've come so close.
You've been like two ships passing in the night. You've got to seal this deal, man.
Yeah, I feel like it's more of a dinghy and like a giant cruise liner passing in the night.
Still ships.
Okay.
That's
but yeah, thanks, man. It's what I've always wanted.
Dude, I'm so happy. I was so happy for you to have it. I was so glad that we were able to do it. And I couldn't wait for Rashad to get it to you. And in his own incredibly awkward way, he still managed to make it happen.
Yeah, I like that the blade comes off. Because for some reason, I like displaying them, just the hilt, like it was real.
Oh, sure. That to me, that's the biggest thing. And when I was trying to decide, do I want him to get this with the blade in it or just the hilt at first? And I'm like, oh, just the hilt. And so that little plug that I made at the end, it lights up inside. So like if you have to like take it out,
okay.
Put the blade in. And so I sent you a video that explains how to do it. Like there's a little Allen wrench. You have to unscrew the flange but yeah, inside there are a couple of LED pixels that
this thing's got a flange.
Yeah. The big wide round part. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Nice. So you learn something every day.
All right. But yeah, it's, I think because that's how I like it. I like it sitting there like a real lightsaber hilt that I can just pack around.
Yeah. I got to get one of those little like Perspex stands. To sort of,
oh man, I was in this Secret Santa thing last year and I got Josh Nelson a lightsaber stand that for a saber that I built for him, and it's super cool because it's like acrylic, and you know these little lamps, like my buddy Emily got me this one where it's got an LED base, it lights up and it can be all different colors in here. It's like that, but it's a lightsaber stand and it's got LEDs in the base, and you just keep clicking the little button until it's the color you want. He's got the blue lit up stand with his saber sitting on it.
You boffins with your little soldering irons love your LEDs, don't you?
Oh, we do, man. We do.
And the other thing I should actually thank you for, Eric, is doing the Struthers Wars episodes with getting all the clips together and talking to people that have enjoyed the pod. It's it honestly, every time you send me one, like I'm like, oh, I've got to listen to this, and afterwards I'm like, I feel great.
I bet, man. I totally get that.
And I love hearing all the old, like, yeah, it just reminds me of all the fun that we've had and stuff.
Those are so much fun to do, and I'm glad that you asked me to do it. It's tough because I know like people will want to do one, but then they realize how much work it is to really comb through, pick the what they want. And I ask them, look, you've got to give me sort of a time range of the part we're talking about it, and just otherwise I spend 10 times as long just trying to find it.
And, so you can't just do it and go like, oh, the time you talked about igniting the green, put that in there.
Right. Well, you know, I think we even talked about this in one of the episodes. I can't remember who it was with, but we were talking about one of the something with Stephen Stanton.
Uh-huh.
And the episode we both thought it was from was not the episode it was. And I combed through this episode probably 4 times going, where the hell is this part at? And it was a completely different one. Yeah.
I did that with one not too long ago, looking for a clip. And then, you know, because you sort of like fast forward every like 30 seconds just to try to find the bit. And I went through it a couple of times and I'm like, I think I must have just had a conversation after the podcast about this, and it wasn't actually on the podcast, but yeah, they're so fun to listen back to the Struthers Wars. So thanks for doing that. And
I'm happy to, man. It's been cool to talk to the people, and every single one of these episodes I've done, I spent probably at least twice as long as the episode is with the person via Skype. Because we just talk. It's the best part.
That kills me, because every time you like say, oh, we talk for like 50 minutes before we started recording, I'm just like, oh, have I taught you nothing, Eric? Save it for the podcast.
That's what I need to do, is start doing another show that's just nothing but Struthers Wars outtakes.
Yes, yes. Yeah, so this is a bit of a landmark episode in that it's the first one, interview episode post the rise of Skywalker. And you know how it goes, Eric. We always ask the guests what they're most looking forward to in Star Wars. So that's totally off the cards now. And we've got Mando 2, we've got Cassian, we've got Kenobi, we've got mystery film, we've got mystery project Luminous.
Yeah, that's actually something we spent quite a bit of time talking about with King Tom on the motivators this week, because he's been super interested in that. And
save
it's
the plugs to the end, Eric.
but it is. It's still a mystery to me. But
well, it's a mystery to everyone. I just I'm fascinated to see if it lives up to the sizzle.
That's a tough thing, man.
Like, if it's the most extended of those rumors and it's a lead into a new film series, amazing.
Yeah, yeah.
Mind blown. If it's a collection of short stories, my mind is very much together.
Well, let me tell you something, man. When we were talking the other day, before I picked the kids up, I had to run to Walmart and because I had a ship to store thing, and it was one of these Han Solo cardboard play sets that I got on clearance Walmart. Yeah. And so I get it home, and but then I got busy and I haven't opened this cardboard box, and my son, it was driving him crazy. What's in the box? What's in the box? What's in the box? Well, then I'm up here in my office / studio / guitar storage area, and
guitar center.
I get back down and he's standing at the bottom of the stairs. So, Dad, are you going to open this thing or not? And it's like, yeah, buddy, let's do it. I finally open it and he sees what it is. And it was like, huh, you didn't get that for me, did you? It's basically what he said. And I was like, oh, dude, did the hype just crush your soul when you saw the reality of it? Hopefully the Project Luminous won't be like that.
He just didn't want those toilet rolls.
Well, he knew that this was for me. Ah. He did ask first thing, are you going to get one of these for me, Dad, sometime? You know what, though? I'm just going to tell you. I got him the Vandor one, which is the train sticking out of the side of the mountain. The train doesn't move. Well, I meant the toy. Which toy? That's what it's called.
Yeah.
The Vandor-1. It's actually way cooler than I thought it was going to be. It's pretty dope. It would be cool if it was all plastic, but gosh, the price point would have been out of hand. And so what they did for the money, I mean, it was especially great because God, they were on clearance for like $15 at one point. They're really neat, man. A lot of playability in them. So I feel like if people would have just given them a chance, it would have done better.
So just backtracking, the mm-hmm. thing you're most looking forward to in Star Wars is disappointing your son?
Yes, that's exactly it. Exactly. You know, no. So the thing I'm probably looking forward to the most in Star Wars is like enjoying the mystery of what's coming. I know that sounds dumb, but anticipation when it's done right can be fun. But I'm super stoked on the live action stuff since The Mandalorian was so good. And I'm hoping that that's didn't set the bar so high that they can't possibly ever match it again. But I'm looking forward to the Kenobi series. I think the Cassian series will be cool too. And obviously the second season, The Mandalorian. And I've enjoyed a handful of the Star Wars books. And so, you know, a really cool new novel would be nice.
So you're looking forward to everything.
Basically, yeah, I know it's kind of a cop-out, but yes.
It's a definite cop-out.
I'm looking forward to everybody just getting along.
Oh, you're going to be more disappointed than your son.
Yeah, I know. I really, with the next film being so far out, and as of now, we only have some pretty strong rumors about what it's going to be. It's hard for me to hang all my excitement and of anticipation on that. So like in the initial future, it's just to see what they do with Disney Plus as far as new content goes.
Yeah, well, the Mandalorian obviously exceeded expectations mm-hmm. from where I sat, for sure. I was just like, oh, just...
Yeah.
It was invigorating how good it was. So now I've, especially for that Ben Kenobi series, a series that, in principle, I'm against.
Mm-hmm.
Because I just don't think he should be having adventures. But
right,
if he's
right.
going to have them, I'll tune in, Bob. You've got me. By making the series, you have won me over. But because Deborah Chow's directing it and she did such a killer job in those Mandalorian ones, I'm just like, oof, that's some good sizzle.
Yeah. Her episodes were my favorites. Okay. Maybe it's going to be like, have you ever seen this YouTube video of Nick Offerman? He's sitting by a fireplace in a rocking chair, and there's different versions of it. One of them's 10 hours long, and he's just sitting there in a rocking chair drinking scotch. And just doesn't talk, doesn't do anything, just hanging out. And maybe that's what the Ben Kenobi series will be like. That Nick Offerman video has a ton of views. Maybe people just tune in to see old Kenobi sitting there in his hut being weird.
All right, my anticipation is dropping. I've got stubble, a rocking chair, and a mirror. I could make that one at home.
Yeah, that'll be the fan film.
All righty, Eric. Well, it's been an absolute delight doing the pod with you and getting to know you. We somehow became friends through all the lasers and the
LEDs
and the JPEGs and the MP3s and the RSS feeds. You know, you've become such a great friend to us, and you've always there to help us out whenever we need. So you're one of the good dudes, Eric. So I appreciate that.
Thanks, man. And I say the same to you. You're a really good dude too. And thanks for having me on. This has been a lot of fun.
Nice. Now, let the good people of the internet know where they can listen to The Bad Motivators.
So check out The Bad Motivators wherever podcasts are found, in all the usual places. And you can follow us on Twitter at @bad_motivators. Yeah, we're working on getting it without the underscore. We'll have to see how that goes. But follow me on Twitter at Eric Strothers if you want to see my goings on. I'm the smartest one of all the motivators. So
you can't fix the address because someone else has already got the address, guys, and they don't use it. And Eric's been complaining about it for, I'm going to guess, 3 years now. I'm just doing the math with 150 episodes. But it's a trope. It's a trope of the show. You're complaining about that underscore. If you don't have it's that's like Batman without the Joker. Do you know what I mean? You need that nemesis.
I guess that's true. That is true. Maybe I could just make it at Bad Motivators with the underscore at the end.
Oh, that's even worse. it's always such a defeatist sign when they've added the underscore at the end. It's like, oh, you just.
Yeah. What is this, a password?
You just up and quit. It is one of my favorite podcasts, so make sure you give it a listen. I'm on episode 150, and the one that just came out this week with King Tom is a ripper. It's 151.
Yeah. And Steel is on several episodes, all of them equally divisible by 25. If you're man, I need some more Steel Saunders content. Hit the Bad Motivators feed. Anything divisible by 25 equally, you'll find him there.
It's 25, my special number decided by Eric. I sort of think it worked. I was like I did it maybe twice, and then you're like, yeah, man, we're up to episode 75. You come on every 25 episodes, and I'm like, okay.
Well, here's what happened. Okay. So they were up on me about having a guest. I said, look, you don't understand what it takes to edit these because we weren't very good at like being quiet and keeping the flow going. So it took me forever to do these things. And so finally I'm like, all right, listen, for the 25th episode, it's a milestone. We'll have a guest. And we wanted you to be the guest. So you were our first official guest on the show. And then, for 50 episodes, it's like, man, that's a milestone. Let's see if Steel will do it. And then I'm like, wait a minute. He did the 225s. Now it's a thing. It's officially a thing.
Well, I'll talk to you in 23 weeks, Eric. It's a media blackout till then, buddy.
Fair enough, man.
All righty. Well, it's been an awesome time. Thanks so much for, all you do for Star Wars fandom. It's so appreciated. Thanks to you guys for listening. You can follow us at Steel Wars, and you can hear tons more content on our Patreon, which is patreon.com/Steel Wars. And for $3 a week, you get multiple bonus shows. I think there's like 4 bonus shows up this week. It is all sent to your RSS feed in your little phone, and then you listen to it. It's the best. The system works. It's not just LEDs. There's other technologies in the world at work. Thank you very much. And may that force be with you. Los Angeles, Steel Wars returns to the Scum and Villainy Cantina Saturday, the 25th of January, for our 1 month after the Rise of Skywalker live podcast. Our 1 month after the Last Jedi podcast was a huge sold out Star Wars discussion, and this one should be no different. So get your tickets at steelwars.com, and we'll see you at the Scum and Villainy Cantina in Hollywood on Saturday the 25th at 4 p.m. Click the link in those show notes.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.